Accountants, it's time to make it count. My name is Freddie Bennett, former accounting industry executive turned entrepreneur, business owner, change maker, and Guinness World Record holder. In each episode, we bring you the powerhouses from across the accounting world to help you discover how to unlock endless possibilities, turbocharge your accounting practice, and make it count in business and in life. Thank you for showing up for yourself today. Now, let's dive into another unmissable episode of Make It Count. Welcome to another episode of Make It Count. And today, folks, I have got a real treat for you. I am delighted to welcome Mr. Jason Topp to the Make It Count studio. Jason is Managing Director at SMYD Accounting and Advisory. Jason, many are called, few are chosen. I am delighted that you're here. Welcome to Make It Count.
Oh, thanks, mate. It's based off that, it's certainly a wonderful pleasure to be here. And thank you very much for, you know, giving me this opportunity, mate.
No, it's going to be amazing. I'm super excited about this episode. So, Jason, so anyone that hasn't heard about yourself or hasn't heard about your firm, SMYD, tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, so my wife and I, we own and run SMYD Accounting Advisory. We're now based down in the wonderful little part of the world, Waihee Beach. We've primarily still got clients up in Auckland, but we're slowly building our footprint down in the Bay Area. As the name suggests, we're an accounting firm, very strong compliance background, but we also have quite a lot of offerings that we do in the advisory space. And a lot of our new staff are our latest staff member anyway, are coming in specifically in the advisory only space, which is super exciting.
You're right. And we're certainly going to dive into that. And I totally agree, Jason, the advisory space is rapidly growing and super exciting. Let's go back to the beginning. You've mentioned the move from Auckland, but if we go even further back, was it always the lifelong goal for a teenage Jason to find a wife and open an accounting firm together and live happily ever after?
Oh, mate, I certainly hope that there are some listeners out here that worked with me when I was a graduate, because I'm sure they would sort of be sitting here wondering how on earth I ended up opening and owning an accounting firm, because I myself kind of agree with that. I still sort of have to wonder how it all happened. So I can firmly say that at no point in my teenage years did I ever imagine that I would be sitting here owning an accounting firm. I didn't even do accounting at school, and it was never, ever my intention to enter into the industry. I was on a pathway to work in construction with an entire family of builders. Mm. All my friends and mates were all in construction, and that was where I was heading. So to be sitting here, this owning a firm, it is rather still quite surreal, to be honest.
As we were saying, I think before we started recording, we might have to grow up soon. As men who are kind of around the 40 mark, we're like, maybe we're going to have to, to grow up and change these dreams. But how do you go from this pathway of construction to veering off towards the accounting industry?
I think veering off is probably an apt way to describe what happened to me, really. I had a bit of a rough year in my teenage time. I had a bit of lucky stuff happen to me when I was 15, just from playing rugby and playing sport. I ended up popping L4 and L5, the vertebrae in my disc from being tackled, an injury playing rugby. And that was sort of the first pathway to realizing that, you know, working in a manual industry was probably not going to be open to me. Mm. That sort of made me start thinking at that age, like, holy, what am I going to start doing here? And then the following year, we were at a fireworks event, and I was just walking home. This was back home where I lived, in Upper Hutt, just out of Wellington. And I was walking home from the fireworks event, and there was a dude, just drugged up, souped up on alcohol, just coming down a residential road. Car was doing 100 odd K an hour, and he lost control on a corner. Mm. And just lost control on the corner, slid across the road, and happened to slam into a lamppost. And as he hit this lamppost, the car sort of wrapped around the lamppost and, collected me as I happened to be standing on the other side of the lamppost.
Ouch.
You know, when you talk about it like that, certainly ouch is the best way to describe it. But, it was one of those completely surreal moments, because as it hit me, you know, the impact of it hitting me took the shoes off my feet, took my hat off my head. It was like that scene from, you know, The Wicked Witch of the West, where she disappears and all that's left is the shoes on the ground. And they subsequently found me two houses away from where the car had hit me. And it basically threw me over the pavement, over a fence and into someone's front yard. But as they found me, there was not a single drop of blood or not even a broken bone.
Wow.
I had a severe concussion, you know, pretty crazy head injury from it, obviously from the impact. But ultimately, I was back at school the following week. And it was almost like nothing had even happened.
That is crazy. I mean, I'm sure it's gone through your mind that, you know, a second earlier, a second later, if you'd been a meter left or right, it sounds like it could be a totally different outcome.
Oh, mate, like, yeah, if that car had hit me at full speed, like, yeah, I think the kinetic energy of it hitting me probably would have killed me. Yeah, and if I'd sort of two steps further on, it probably wouldn't hit me at all. But, you know, it is what it is, right? It's one of those things that happened. And it's one of those moments that, you know, I think I continually, no matter how I spin it, I think every decision I've ever made sort of all stem back to the back injury and the getting hit by that car because they've had a pretty profound impact on the decisions that I later had to make on what I was going to do.
Now, if you've got a decision to make or when you've had a decision to make, how have those two, on the surface, negative incidents affected your decision-making process?
It's an interesting question because I was only 16, so it hadn't really dawned on me. It was like one in a billion, right? To be hit by a car at that speed and literally nothing happened, no physical injury whatsoever. And at the time, it hadn't really dawned on me because I obviously got no memory of it, right? Oh, I've got a memory of waking up in hospital and I still remember my uncle was there and I still remember my dad saying, you know, you've been hit by a car and you're kind of trying to work it all out. But that's kind of it. And it was one of those decisions that, or one of those things that happened that as I got older and it sort of manifested itself as I came to my mid to late 20s. And, you know, I've had my sort of fair struggles with mental health, which I'm happy to talk about at some point. And it was through those times that I actually really sat down with someone and they helped me sort of unpick what had happened in terms of my decision-making and how it had affected me in the work and my decisions, what I'm going to do for work and professional life and everything. And, you know, it's one of those things that I've realized now in terms of decision-making, it's given me a real focus on, I suppose, purpose as a big driver, because you look at that as essentially a second chance, right? And I've realized sort of recently that from subconsciously, I think from that happening, it's meant that I've got to have purpose in what I'm doing. I've got to make sure that, you know, because I do, every day is a gift, right, for me now. So I suppose I've had that, I've been fortunate from an unfortunate experience. I've got this fortunate outlook where I do know that the time is limited. It's precious. And my word, it can be taken away quick, right?
It can be.
So it is making sure that I'm constantly living, almost making the most of that chance. And so the way I see to make the most of that is to ensure that there's the purpose to what you're doing as opposed to essentially wasting time, for want of a better word.
I love that. And thank you for sharing. I think the whole topic of purpose and fate and direction, both metaphorically and literally in this case in our lives, is such a thing. I think to create a purpose-driven business in the accounting industry and also to help our clients create purpose-driven businesses, it's so powerful. It's so easy to get caught up in the numbers sometimes, and but numbers don't always tell the whole story. And I think it's so powerful. And on that story then, so with understanding that you had this second chance and wanting to, whether consciously or unconsciously, move forward with purpose, when did you start to think accounting could be the way forward?
When I was, I think, 17, at that point, I'd had surgeons tell me that I couldn't do a trade or I couldn't do any physical manual labor because of my back. And then the following year, I had this thing happen. So it was, you know, in my head, I'm thinking, what on earth am I going to do here? And so it was really weird. I think from that, I always knew that I've always wanted to travel, you know, like there's always been this deep part of me. I think it was because my cousin, I grew up watching my cousin traveling and exploring the world. And she used to send us postcards back from all these far flung places. And so I think that was the first moment that just started driving me to make a decision around what was going to allow me to travel. You know, I got a B bursary. I was all right at school. I passed everything, but I had no idea what I wanted to do. Absolutely no clue. I was completely lost because I couldn't do trades, right? So I remember thinking to myself, well, I want to travel. So that's always really important to me. I can't really see myself being as an air host. So I can't really, and back then travel bloggers and all that stuff didn't exist. So what can I do that's going to allow me to travel? My cousin worked and lived in the UK. She was having a hell of a time. So I was like, I want to do what she's doing. And so I was like, well, what did she do over in the UK? And she was an accountant. So I thought, oh, well, accounting, that's quite cool, actually. Like, if I go to the UK, because I've always wanted to go and live over and do what she did. So I was like, well, if I went and became a chartered accountant, that would be a great way to get me over to the UK. And then I figured that, actually, if I became an accountant, like, that's a pretty damn good business experience. Like, it's going to give me heaps of opportunities in owning and understanding and running a business. And one day I could actually own my own construction firm, or I could be an owner or be involved in running and managing a construction company, because I love trades and so much. So I was like, okay, well, that kind of settles it for me. Then I'm going to give this accounting thing a shot. And that was how I ended up going to uni and studying accounting.
How did your family react, as you say, with a family that's steeped in the construction industry, with everyone saying, again, you know, either purposefully or unconsciously, kind of, this is what we do with this family, for you to say, I'm going to go, again, physically to another place, I'm going to go to another career direction, were your family supportive, or were they saying, what on earth are you doing?
Yeah, I think I've been blessed to have an incredible family, and they just wanted me to go and do something, whether I was at university studying or going to do a trade. They were certainly surprised, let's put it that way, by my choice in going to become an accountant, because there was not a single, I mean, I was never really that good at maths. And, you know, but ultimately, yeah, there was certainly no push to stay in the trades. And I think when I explained the reasoning behind it, I think they kind of understood it. They didn't think that I'd follow through, I think. I don't think anyone did. But, but yeah, no, there was certainly no railroading or pushing into doing anything.
I think you make a really powerful point there as well, Jason, in terms of, you created an outcome that you wanted to achieve. You said, yeah, I want this life, and it makes sense to achieve this outcome and this goal than to go into accounting and maybe have my accounting firm. And then you thought, well, okay, well, let's think about the skills I need to learn or the steps I need to take to get me there. And it's a very, again, a very purposeful, very driven approach, because I know a lot of people who are either considering going into accounting or are already in accounting, and they maybe want to develop their advisory skills. They may say, oh, but I'm not good at selling. As you say, I'm not good at maths. I'm not good at this. And so they stop. So they don't try. Whereas you're like, here's what I want to achieve. Yeah, I might not be very good at this thing, but I'm still going to do it anyway. I'm going to either upskill myself, or I'm going to find a different way of doing things, not to divert myself from the goal that I want to achieve. And is that always something you've had, do you think? Or is it something that you've had to learn over time, like a habit?
I've never had it said to me like that before, to be honest, mate. It's all I've ever known. I mean, when I went to university, I was going to go, firstly, for the next 4 years, I was doing my degree. Then once I finished, I was going to spend 4 years, you know, getting CA. And then from there, I was going to the UK. So, you know, I think what you've raised is where there's a really good point, because up until, oh goodness, right up until I was 30, that part of the goal was always in motion, because I was either, you know, once I got, you know, we did a year, we finished uni, I got my CA, did a year, and I also had wanted to do a year in Whistler in Canada. So went and did a year over there working in a bar, which was, that was wild fun.
I bet.
Well, you made more blooming money over there working bartending than what you did in, you know, working many other jobs. And, you know, but it was good, man. You just got to mountain bike in summer and snowboard in winter. So we kind of got to do that. So there's always things that we wanted to do. And then we get to the UK and did our stint over there and contracted and did a whole bunch of cool stuff and saw some cool places, traveled for a year. So everything was always part of that goal I think I'd set from 18. And then it was really interesting because we got back in 2016. And that was actually my first episode or my first experience with anxiety, depression, like mental health struggles. And the reason I think I was struggling so much is because we got home and got married. And then within a year of being home and married, you know, I was locked up, mortgaged up and knocked up, you know. And, you know, by the end of that 1 year, we had a baby there, we had a massive mortgage, and I was in a job that I was literally just doing because I needed to do it to pay the mortgage and feed my family. And then for the next 3 years, it was probably the hardest 3 years of my entire life. And it's only now that I look back and realize it's because I kind of lost direction and I wasn't actually doing anything to develop a higher, I suppose, for a bigger purpose or a bigger goal. I'll never forget, I was sitting in Vic Park and in Auckland, and I was just like, I was in a state, man. I was a mess at this point. And I remember thinking to myself, like, you know, I was seeing a professional at this point as well, and they were helping me go through it all and work it all out. And that was where we sort of worked out the implications of this car accident and what I was doing. And, you know, and I remember thinking to myself, like, here I am. I had this accident. I've walked away with this second chance, this incredible gift at life, this opportunity that, I mean, how many people actually get that opportunity in life? And I became an accountant. Like, it was this moment where I was like, whoa, man, like, that is no way in which to make the most of the second chance. And so that was like the dawned on me then that I think I'd sort of fallen into this trap of sort of going to work, coming home without actually feeling like each day I was working towards something. And that was what sort of stemmed the next step, really.
Well, firstly, thank you for sharing that, Jason. I think it's such a powerful and honest message. I'm fairly open with the mental health struggles that I've had in the past as well. And so I know exactly what you mean, that whole feeling of, is this it? And it's kind of like a feeling of frustration, but also guilt, because you're like, oh, I've got relationships, I've got families, I've got money, I've got a house, and yet here I am feeling lost still. I think, how selfish of me. I should be more grateful. But I know what it's like to have that heavy blanket of dark depression on you. And then you think, I just shake it off, get your head in the game. And I say, despite all the help, it can be difficult. And can I ask, the job that you mentioned, was that still in the accounting industry? Did you have a job as an accountant at that time, or was it a different one?
Yeah. When I left public practice in 2010, I didn't like the industry, to be perfectly honest. I really struggled with the fact that, you know, like, we weren't really in a position to help people. We were very much seen as a cost, and you know, people would come in with their shoeboxes, and so there was no real opportunity to help. I love the people side of things. And so, you know, we'd just sit there and just, you know, you're just punching numbers and punching accounts out. And, you know, we just weren't very useful. So I actually had left. I was like, oh, I can't. This is not what I want to do. And so I was over in, you know, in the UK, and I was just contracting. So that was where I got into like the commercial, different various commercial roles. I worked as, oh goodness, what was I doing? I worked in for a parking enforcement company, worked for like one of the top hospitals that did all the nose jobs and plastic surgery for like royal families and stuff like that. Worked for a PR company, worked for the UK's version of New Zealand Trade and Enterprise, which, you know, that would be pretty interesting to work in now with various things going on over there.
Definitely.
And, you know, just all sorts of different things. And then when I got back to New Zealand, I sort of continued working in commercial roles, for big corporate roles.
When we have these mental health episodes, and I have to say as well at this stage that what I love about your story is that you are the embodiment of the phrase, we have two lives. The second life begins when we understand that we only have one life. And so you had this moment when that made you realize your mortality, that we only have one shot at this. It would have been easy, and again, maybe I would have done this, to at that moment around 2016, to be like, right, that's it. I'm going to go and open the yoga retreat in Bali. I'm going to go and become a personal trainer. I'm just going to go and surf all day to take a totally different direction again. But you chose to stay in the industry that was obviously calling to you, but to more focus on it sounds like purpose and an impact that you could have.
Yeah, it was interesting because that 2016 year was a really critical year, because, I mean, at that point, that's when I was looking at everything. So I was like, I can't live like this, you know, as you know, right? And as you've described it, it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. I sucked at my job. Like, anyone that listens to me will, and that worked with me. So every day you're going and sucking, and you're not really feel like you're achieving. It was so bad. And the worse you feel, the worse it got. And I was like, okay, like, what do I want to do? Like, who am I? And I was, you know, that's where you start questioning everything about you, right? And I looked at various options, and I was like, oh, what if I get into sales or something like that? Because I'd always quite enjoyed that side of things. And And then ultimately, my wife and I, when we were living in Canada, my wife worked for Lululemon, you know, the yoga company. Lululemon used to make all their staff do a lot of mindset stuff and goal setting and stuff like that. The staff were then, they had to go and do this exercise where they had to write down, in 10 years' time in my life, I'm doing this, that, and the other thing. This was dead season, so we had a bit of spare time. So we sat down and we did this exercise, and we were just sitting in Starbucks in Whistler Village. And we, unbeknownst to us, we didn't realize, but we kept it, and we actually found it. And we went, like, this was in 2016 when we were unpacking all these boxes. And in this thing, basically 10 years ago, we had written, in 10 years' time, we wake up and we're owning our own business and we live by the beach and we get to go and spend all this time with these kids. That was the phrase and that was the context of what we'd written. And we found it and we sort of said to each other, we're like, oh my God, look at this. You know, whilst we read this thing here, we're like, oh my God, in 10 years' time, this is what we're doing. And here we were in a 90 square meter, two-bedroom house in Massey in West Auckland and, you know, me working in this job that I, yeah. So we were just like, what the heck's going on? And then we sort of looked back on that. That then was, I think, the catalyst for setting the next stage of goals in which we wanted. And so we sat down and we were like, well, far out, what are we doing? Like, I really do want to live by the beach and I really actually do want to own my own business I do want to have my own construction company one day. And then it was that little moment that sort of reset things and helped us go forward. And I think that stopped me from leaving the industry altogether and going and doing something crazy. And I mean, obviously we had soon to be two children coming up. So, and we had to keep that in mind. And I've still got that piece of paper. I share it quite often with clients. Hey, it's quite cool. Like when you show them, cool. Like, hey, look what I wrote when I was 26. Look, we've done it.
That's the thing that you made it happen, because I know so many people who would. Everyone has a goal. Nobody has a plan. Yeah. We all talk about these things that we'd like to do, and then life gets in the way, and we say, "Oh well, you know, life can't work out the way you want it to." But I'm a massive believer that it can. But we have to make it happen. We have to change. We have the power to make that change. We have the power to make it count. To coin a phrase, we have to put in the action and again move with purpose. And were there ever any moments, say from being in Auckland, say in that small apartment, to the life you've got now, were there any moments when it felt too difficult, where you thought this is just going to be a pipe dream, it's never going to happen?
Oh, if only my wife was here to answer that question. Oh, look, mate, it has been. The most insane journey, going from that day back in 2016 to where we are now in 2023. Honestly, man, you know, like, I remember when we looked at this and we sat down and we were just like, okay, look, we've got to sort this out. Leah was like, well, I don't want to live in Massey. Nothing against Massey for anyone that lives there, by the way, but we don't want to raise our children here. We want to raise our children in a beachside community. And there's a theme here that you'll see which comes through. We're quite impulsive. So we were like, well, what beach do we want to live at if we're going to do this? We started going around and looking at different places to live. We looked at Raglan, but realized very quickly we certainly weren't cool enough for that place. I can't surf either. So we looked all up and down the place, and we went to this little place called Waihee Beach. And when we showed up there and we looked at it, and we're like, wow, this is perfect. It's perfect distance from Auckland. You know, it's only an hour north of Tauranga, and Hamilton's close and all this stuff. And so we're like, yeah, I think we can live here. This place looks cool. So we settled on where we want to live. And then we thought to ourselves, well, all right, how are we going to live here? What are we going to do? Like, I was working in these corporate roles, and back then, before COVID, you know, they didn't really have work from home options. And we also knew we wanted our own business. And I was like, well, no, I want to one day own a construction company. So what do I do? How on earth we could make it work? And then I just remember thinking, I was like, well, I'm a chartered accountant. I can start an accounting firm. And she looked at me and she was like, well, you haven't worked in the accounting firm since 2000 and, like, whenever it was, 2000 and when did I leave? 2010. And you were a total muppet. Like, you know, what? And you left it because you didn't like it. Like, what on earth are you going to do? Start your own accounting firm?
I love that. That real vote of confidence you got there. That's
So, I mean, that there says something, that the fact I hadn't worked in it for so long, the fact that, you know, once again, I mean, if there's any sort of feedback you get on this, I'm sure it will be from people that used to work with me to say I wasn't very good. There's a lot more to that. I think I was battling a lot of stuff going on, but ultimately I said, stuff it. I got to do it. Like, I'll figure it out. I'll just do it. Mm. And so I just literally one day I wrote this post on Facebook. And I just had it there. And I remember I sat on it for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then one day I just got up and I was like, we've got to do this. This is ridiculous. And just pushed post. Mm. And that got the ball rolling. And it was really interesting. Got like heaps of likes and friends and family all sort of figuratively patting me on the head saying how cute that was. Because, I mean, how many people say on Facebook they're going to start a business, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I never forget, dude I played rugby with, he was starting a plumbing firm. And he just rung me and he said, oh, mate, can you be my accountant? And I remember I sort of squeaked in this voice like, yes. And I remember looking at Lee, I was like, we got the client. So he came on board and then, you know, and that sort of started the journey. And it's been, it was hard work, man. We had nothing. I hadn't been in the industry for so long. I couldn't rely on anyone to refer to me because no one would have. Mm. So we just had to literally do the hard yards, man. We did everything. I remember thinking, I was like, how do I differentiate myself from the accounting firms? So there were all these other accounting firms out there. And that was where we even got the name from. The name SMYD stands for Show Me Your Debits.
Nice. And,
you know, like that came from when I was contracting in the UK. So we're like, well, let's just roll with that.
Mm.
We just trowled Facebook. So we just had all these different, we were in all these different community groups and we just waited for anyone that would post, ask for recommendation about an accountant. And then we were like, I had a website, but I built it. It was horrible. And then I went on to Fiverr and got a fellow overseas to sort of update it for me, but it was awful. And so I was like, well, what about we actually just keep our Facebook page updated and it's just all it is showing pictures of us as like trying to humanize who we are.
Mm.
And so I got the idea of like every time I saw clients, I'd go and get selfies and that with them. We just kept on chucking all these selfies up of me with clients and half of them we were on the piss together and half of them we were doing like having coffees together and doing stuff. And we just flooded our Facebook page with all these posts, literally one by one, as we saw people asking for recommendations, we just jumped on there and we said, hey, check out our Facebook page. If you dig our vibe, drop us a DM. And people started doing it. I think they liked the human side of it that we were putting out there. But man, I'll tell you what, man, I was going around 3-4 nights a week every night to see different people, just hustling, trying to get them on board. And Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays, I mean, what were they? They were my work days. And, you know, the alarm bells used to go off at 3 a.m. sometimes. So, man, it was hard, eh?
I love that.
That's something I can do again.
But that's how dreams are made. And I love those kinds of stories. Yeah. I think, as you say, that human face of accounting, it's a lot of what we talk about here on Make It Count. You know, it's about being a bit disruptive. It's about being a bit different. And were there ever any naysayers, either people within the industry or people outside the industry? Be like, oh, accountants don't act like this. Accountants don't paste selfies on the piss. They're accountants and they're professionals and everything else. Or was it always just going to be that way?
I mean, there were certainly people that used to, I suppose they laughed, or I do remember certain people that like really were just like, what are you doing, man? I suppose this was my first experience of really making sure that you start surrounding yourself with people that, you know, lift you up and don't bring you down.
Mm.
Because, yeah, I think from those initial moments where I had a few people saying I couldn't do it, ultimately, I just surrounded myself so much with clients. And, you know, they were all the same age as me. I mean, 95% of my client base still are in their 30s and mid to late 30s, and they've all got young children. So that was just those people that were surrounding me. And I suppose I worked so much. I didn't see friends of mine for 18 months, 2 years. I didn't see anyone. I became almost like enclosed. I remember like family and that, like everyone used to think we were just like these cute little accountants that were just doing a few sort of tax returns and that for people. And, you know, and like, I think we were just so busy and so just grinding and hustling and working that we just didn't even really notice if there were people that were doubting. We did have a couple of critical comments that were coming through because we were online so much. So we had a lot of stuff on Facebook. So, you know, I very quickly realized the damage that social media can do. And I think still to this day, even though we're active on it, I don't scroll it or do anything to have anything to do with it. I just was really cognizant of making sure that I was only with people that I strive to want to be around, as opposed to, you know, people that would bring us down.
Definitely. And I find this to be a fascinating paradox. I'd love to get your view on this, Jason, because something that I've struggled with in the past. I think other people are struggling as well. So if we look at the two versions of yourself, you had to say this 2016 person who was, as you say, mental health wasn't great, not feeling brilliant, stressed, burnt out, as you say yourself, sucked at your job. But then you have this more present day version of you who is probably working more hours, working harder, but doing an amazing job. And I'm sure probably loving what you do. And for me, that's the power of purpose. It's when we're doing something that isn't, and I know this might be getting a bit soft and fluffy for some of our listeners, because I'll get my crystals out. But I love this stuff and it's my show, so I'll say what I want. I mean, I personally find this, because I've been there in my career, when we are not living a life that's true to our purpose, that's when our performance drops, when our mental health drops. But when we are, dare I say, on our path, when we're living our purpose, we've got more energy, more positivity. We can work more hours because it doesn't really feel like work as such. Does that sound familiar to you?
It's really interesting, the point you've raised, because, I mean, if there was one thing I look back at that 2016 me, like, you had to drag me kicking and screaming to be in the office by 9 a.m. And, you know, by sort of 1:30, 2 o'clock, that was where, you know, you'd go for a bit of a wander around the office and just try and do something just to kill a bit of time to come back. And then I'd sit there at 4:30 and just, you know, sit there and wait for that clock to hit 5. And then I was out of there.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see now why I ended up in the mental space I ended up with. Imagine doing that day in, day out. I work a lot. I'm always working. But yeah, you're right, right? You love it. You know, you're engaging with people. Like, these are my friends. And, you know, so I feel like I'm just surrounded by people that I enjoy being surrounded by. I love chatting to them. I love talking about their business, because a lot of the conversations I suppose I'm having now aren't about compliance and tax and stuff like that. All my conversations now with my clients are around, like, what are you doing? How is your family going? How are you working towards helping your family? And what's actually happening? You know, so, like, to me, it's unbelievable that that's work. And that's where I think, yeah, it sort of lends itself to what you just said, right?
Definitely. I think it's interesting you were saying it's around the conversations and the connections. Yeah, not once have you said, in terms of your current role, your current business, not once have you mentioned selling advisory or selling services or having to be a salesperson. Because we all know accountants hate that whole S word, but if you have the right connections, the right clients, the right conversation, it is just like a natural act of communication, relationship building. There isn't such the big salesy part of it that we all kind of dread.
You're absolutely right, and I think we've all just got this scene in our head of that Hollywood movie of the sleazy car salesperson, right? I remember, like, we went to Fiji in August and came home. We've got 3 clients out of that trip.
Amazing.
You know, all of them are doing various advisory things with us. And it's just because, like, I was just on, dare I say, I was just basically on the piss in the bar, you know, one of them in the pool. And I was just asking about their business and asking about how things were going and just loving chatting about, hearing about their success story, like for 2 of them in particular. You know, it was such a massive success for them to be over here, you know, on holiday away from their business. And I think, you know, if you're interested in their business, you can then form that connection, right? And, you know, and I'm aware that the only reason they're telling me that is because I'm an accountant as well. So it's being very grateful, I suppose. That's where I become incredibly grateful for being an accountant. People open up to you on that level. And in the end, they enjoy talking to you about it. They realize that actually you know your stuff. And they naturally then want to find out more about how you can help them. And that's kind of how I define selling, really, is just asking questions, making a connection, and then naturally this sort of evolves to the conversation being how you can help them do it.
I totally agree. And I was reminded of one of my old mentors said to me once, could have that thing when they, they worked in the accounting advisory space. They were very good at what they did, and they had their child ask them, "Daddy, what is actually your job? What do you do?" And he tried to explain it, and he was like, he said something about adding value, and the child was like, "What?" And he said something about, you know, helping clients plan for the future. The child was like, "I've got no idea what you're talking about, Dad." And then he was like, "What I do is I ask questions and I tell stories." Yeah. And the child was like, "Oh, okay, I get it." That's what we do in the most powerful way. We ask questions and we tell stories. And that is how we, ironically, and maybe paradoxically, we make more sales, we build better relationships, we get the funnest clients, not by trying to sell something, not by trying to impart a framework or a service. It's actually just by asking questions and telling stories.
I'm going to steal that and tell my kids that, because they always ask me when I'm going up to Auckland what I'm doing. So I think, yes, asking questions.
Just say I'm going to go and ask questions. Exactly. Try and explain the accounting industry's fastest growing podcast to an 8-year-old. And that's a whole new ball game. And I get other people to tell stories and they ask questions. I mean, Jason, I've loved this story. And I think and it's such a powerful, there's so many lessons in here. You've had such a journey so far. I knew I had to get that word journey in there. It's been such an incredible story. What does the future look like, both for you and where you see your place in the wider accounting industry going forwards?
For me, at the point we're at the business, we're bringing someone in who's doing their, getting their license, their practicing certificate. So that's going to be a big stepping stone for us to essentially hand the keys over to someone else. Mm. You know, and then we're really now starting to focus on traveling again. Ultimately, what I want to do is to give my kids that wonderful experience of seeing the world. That's, if I was going to give a legacy for them, it's going to be that. Mm. And so, you know, we're using that now as our basis for, well, what do we need to do to make that happen? And the reality is, I don't know if there's a huge presence for me in the accounting industry going forward. Like, we're really happy where we're at. Really enjoying. We love the team, love the business, love the clients that we got. And, you know, now I just want to travel more and more and more. So it's about, how do we build this business up? So how do I train my team? How do I move the mantle and the baton? I think move everything away from me. I look at that journey, for want of a better word, and I'm quite keen to get to near the end of that one and start a new one. Mm. I'm in the process now of buying into my first construction company, which is going to be, you know, that's going to be the culmination of another lifelong dream.
Yep.
My future really is moving into other businesses and being actively involved in a few others and being able to look back at that business and be like, man, I built that. And then being, and there's some, the other thing as well, I want to say is like, me and my wife built it, you know, like, couldn't have done it without her. I mean, goodness, she's got a marketing background. So let's make sure she gets the credit for all of that side of things. But, you know, yeah, I want to see a business that can run without me. I want to know that should that incident happen again and there's no lamppost there, that's, you know, there is a lasting business that goes without me, that my family's looked after. I think that's always driving what I want to do. So in actual fact, I'm really working to do myself out of a job. I really want to start traveling. I want to start seeing more of the world, and fingers crossed, we'll just see what it entails and where it takes me. So
definitely,
it's a good place to be at right now. Mm. Yeah, we'll just see where it goes.
I'd love that. And even though we're coming to the end, I obviously have to ask the question, what's it like working in a business with your significant other?
We're actually on the verge of creating another group. And the group is fully focused on husband and wife business
amazing.
Owners. It's going to actually be me and my wife that are running it and involved in it. And it's going to be two sides to it, because I suppose I count myself as very lucky. I see Leah's role in the business. She looks after marketing. Mm. And I love the fact that she's incredibly good at what she does. I think it's incredibly important to have a healthy level of respect for each other and what that person does. The only other thing I always say to people is you must have a time and a place when you're talking about work. You can't have work discussions in the evening when you're cooking, making dinner, and when you're doing, you know, when you're at high states of stress. Mm. For us, it works really well because we've got two separate parts of the business and we completely respect what each other does for those roles. And yeah, when we're in working, like she's the marketing director.
Mm.
Like this morning when I was when I saw Leah, she was the marketing director of SMYD. And then, you know, tonight when I see her, she'll be Leah, my wife and mother of my children. So it's about trying to make sure you have those really strong barriers and boundaries, right? We all talk about boundaries. So
definitely.
Especially important when you both run a business.
Yes, I'm sure. And that group sounds really powerful as well. I think there will only be accountants listening to this who are potentially in that setup with their partner, but they will also have many clients who are husband and wife businesses. So I'm sure they can send a lot your way for guidance. Jason, I've loved this conversation. This is one of those conversations that I don't want to end, and time has flown by. Well, unfortunately, all good things must come to an end. Obviously, we do have the final question, which is the tradition here on Make It Count, which is the secret question, where a previous guest gets to ask a question for the current guest, which you've probably guessed it by now, is you. Let me just pull up your secret question, because I haven't even seen this myself.
Oh, goodness. Oh.
Okay, this is an interesting one. So what are your daily habits or routines that have set you up for success? Should I say, do you have any daily habits or routines that have been useful for you over the years?
Yeah, I get up at 4. The alarm goes off at 4:30.
Wow.
You know, we're down at the beach now, so I go to the beach in the mornings now. Mm. And, you know, I've been getting into meditating, which has helped. And, you know, and I always write my three things for the day. I always want to know that each for that day, these are the three things that I want to achieve. 4 times a week, I'll go to the gym. Yeah, and then get home and, you know, having breakfast by 7:30, sort of feeling like I've already achieved a lot of that. So I find that early start with a real focus on you, making sure that I feel the best I possibly can. I mean, a lot of this is driven obviously from the mental health struggles, but I like getting up early. I think we should all get up early and focus on you and just set 3 things you want to do, man. I think there's just no better way to try and win that start of that day.
Definitely. I'll break my own rules here by responding to that, because I totally agree and I love it. I mean, and it's so interesting as well, because again, the parallels with, I'm sure when you're in that place where you weren't as happy with life, and same for me, if I was going to bed, I get up at 5, or at least around 5-ish, I was going to bed at that time some days when I was living, the old me lifestyle. The thought of getting up, I would have been crawling out of bed at the last possible minute I would have timed my routine so I could be at work at the last possible minute. But when you start living your purpose, you're like, no, I want more of this. I want to be getting up earlier. I want to be investing in myself, developing myself, all these things that come to us, which, yeah, years ago, I would have said, not a chance in hell that you would get me awaking at any time like that. But it just goes to show the power of purpose and the power of investing in ourselves and becoming the person who we were always meant to be.
Fingers crossed, man.
Definitely. Jason, like I said, I've loved this. It's been such a powerful conversation. If people want to get in touch with you, if they want to reach out, how and where do they find you?
We're all over. We're in Instagram, Facebook, YouTube now, funny enough. You know, that's my wife that manages that. But if they want to contact me, it's probably just drop me an email, man. Jason@smyd.co.nz.
Perfect. I'll make sure we put that email and all the website links in the show notes as well. Jason, for now, it really has been a pleasure. I've loved this conversation. Thank you for being part of Make It Count. We will have a part 2, and thank you for being part of the show.
Thank you, man. The pleasure's all mine. I love what you do, Freddie.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. I hope today's episode informed, educated, motivated, and inspired you to make it count for your clients and your business. Make sure you check out the show notes of this episode for the all-important links. Please hit subscribe, share it with the world, and don't forget to give us a 5-star review. We love getting feedback on this show, and I'd love to hear which part resonated with you the most. Remember, you have got the skills, talent, expertise, and experience to make a huge difference in the lives and businesses of your clients. The days of the bean counter are over. It's time to make it count. I'll see you on the other side.